Thanks to Slack for supporting the Accidental Creative Podcast. Slack is a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people on your team are always in the loop and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including The Accidental Creative and the new book, Herding Tigers, Be the Leader That Creative People Need, which is all about how to create an environment in which creative teams thrive. I just got back from speaking at a couple of events. One of them was an event in Nashville called Tribe Conference. It was Jeff Goins' annual conference for people who want to put their work into the world. It was a great experience. And one of the consistent themes throughout the event, it was in my talk, which is pretty common to when I give talks, and it was also in many of the other talks, is the importance of putting work out even before you think it's ready for the world. You know, I think often one of the things that we fall prey to as creative professionals is doubting whether what we're doing is really good enough. And the reality is everyone who's put something into the world at some point has asked that question, is this good enough? Is it ready for prime time? And the key for us is understanding when to push through that concern and when to listen to that concern, because in reality, it's maybe not ready yet. So on today's show, I want to talk about the importance of calling your own bluff. And we're going to talk about what that means. I'm going to share the story of someone who I interviewed on the podcast maybe about a year or two ago and how he called his own bluff and what happened as a result. Before we dive in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Slack. So you probably know about Slack, but for those of you who don't, Slack is a collaboration hub for work, whatever kind of work you do. And with Slack, the right people in your team are kept in the loop and key information that they need is always at their fingertips. Teamwork on Slack happens in channels, letting you organize conversations and information around projects, around offices, around teams. And because everything you need to work is in one place, it's faster and easier to get things done. With Slack, your team is better connected. You can reduce emails, you can streamline your team's communication. It saves you time and productivity. It's easy and convenient. You can drag and drop files to share them, and it works wherever you go. With mobile apps for iOS and Android that sync seamlessly, you can always pick up right where you left off, no matter where you are. Slack is where work happens. Find out why at slack.com. That's slack.com. We thank Slack for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. So have you ever had an idea burning inside of you that you knew you could really make take off, but you just couldn't stir the courage to take the first steps? Unfortunately, many people choose to let those ideas die because they refuse to step outside of their comfort zone. You know, they live squarely in the place where everything is predictable and where they can basically organize their life the way they want it to be. But instead of taking strategic steps in the direction of their goals, they just keep waiting for the perfect moment to take that chance. Of course, as we all know, there is no perfect moment. Risks are inconvenient by nature. That's why we call them risks. Well, just a few short years ago, Julian Smith was considering taking a risk. He had an idea for a business, but he also had a pretty comfortable life doing work that he loved. He was a New York Times bestselling author. He was an in-demand speaker and a consultant. And frankly, he had a pretty good life. However, as he shared in an interview for the AC podcast, if you want, you can go back and listen to the episode, or I'll link to it in the show notes. But he wondered if he could actually do what he was teaching other people to do. He said, there's a thing in startups they call an operator. It's someone who can make things happen. And that was profoundly missing from my life. And I was wondering, can I do it? Am I a phony? I didn't even know if I was going to fail, but I decided to take the path and it led me to where I am today. So Smith knew that if he wanted to be able to look himself in the mirror, he needed to call his own bluff and actually build something he could be proud of, actually take the step, actually step out and do the thing that was burning inside of him. And that's how his company Breather was born. However, the path to building the company from concept to launch and raising over $73 million in venture wasn't easy. I still remember Julian and I sat down in an event in Nashville several years ago, and he was kind of back of napkining the idea for Breather and was kind of talking about what he was thinking about doing. And I remember thinking at the time, yeah, okay, sounds interesting. And, you know, obviously things have taken a really quick upward turn for him and for the idea and for Breather. But I think, you know, it's not easy when you have an idea that's burning inside of you. It's not easy to take those first steps. And I think sometimes people think, well, that's easy for that person, right? I mean, Julian was already somewhat successful. I mean, he had a big platform and had been successful in other things. And so I think sometimes people think, well, it's easy for that person. But all of us, everyone, it doesn't matter where you are, where you're starting from, everyone has that twinge of doubt in them when it comes to building things, making things, putting things into the world that could very easily be rejected. And so I want to talk about three insights that I learned from my interview with Julian a couple of years ago that he shared that can help launch a new venture or help get things into the world. So one thing that Julian said was, you have to constantly toe the line between confidence and doubt. Smith says that there's rarely a moment of complete certainty in business, but you still need to act with confidence even when you're riddled by doubt. If you fail to act with confidence, your waffling will trickle down to everyone around you. And this is especially true if you're the leader of a team that's trying to accomplish something difficult. Your team will sense that you're wavering and it'll affect their own ability to engage. There's a trickle-down effect in organizations where if the leader isn't acting with clarity and confidence, then everyone around them will begin to waffle. And so even if you're not certain, you have to be clear and you have to project confidence in your decision-making. Now, that doesn't mean you have to know that you're right. It doesn't mean you can't admit that you don't know for certain, but you have to behave with confidence or no one else will. On the other side, though, if you're super confident, you may go out and act aggressively in the pursuit of your idea, but you have to hold in mind the idea that you could be wrong, which is the doubt part of the equation. You must be willing to question yourself and even question the idea even if you believe that you're right, even if you're absolutely confident, you need to still be willing to listen to disconfirming information. So here's my question for you right now. Where in your work do you need to project more confidence, and where might you be blinded by overconfidence? Which is, I think, another question that we need to ask, right? Are you overconfident, or where maybe are you paralyzed by a lack of confidence? So that's the first question I have for you as you're thinking about the work that you do and the risks that you're taking every day. Are you engaging in blind overconfidence, or do you lack confidence? Which of those might you need to wrestle to the ground in order to put your work into the world? The second thing is, Julian said, it's important to know when to be the tree that resists the wind and when to be the tree that bends. I love this phrase. In a similar vein, you need to know when it's important to seek counsel from others and when you need to ignore the cultural headwinds and stubbornly pursue your idea. Many people are blown to and fro by the opinions of others, and as a result, they never follow through on their idea. Instead, it becomes a watered-down version of whatever pleases the voices around them. You have to have a core set of ideals that drive what you're doing, and you can't afford to compromise those ideals. I call this a productive passion. You need to have a point of view. You need to have a set of battle lines that you've drawn, and you say, listen, there are a lot of things I'm going to compromise, but there are some things that I will not compromise come hell or high water because these are my core ideals. I'm not going to compromise these. So here's my question for you as it relates to this. Do you know what you are and aren't willing to compromise in order to build your idea? This is a really important question to ask because I've known many people, and I'm sure you've encountered them as well, who have spent days or weeks or months or years and they've built something and they've completely lost themselves in the process, or they've chased a job or they've jumped on a career track and they get to the end and they realize, I never even wanted to be here. It's a really easy thing to have happen. You can lose sight if you don't stay connected to your productive passion, to that core set of principles. So it's important to consider those core principles as you're building something and know what you are and aren't willing to compromise in order to achieve your objective. And then finally, the final thing that Julian said was, you need to build something a few people will love rather than something a lot of people will like. And we've heard this before, right? I mentioned that I was at Jeff Goins' Tribe conference last weekend, and one of the things that he said is, are you making things for someone, or are you making things for anyone, right? You can't make things for anyone. You have to make things for someone. Someone will fall in love with your work. Anyone, if you're making for anyone, it means that no one really is going to fall in love with your work. So Julian said, you need to build something a few people will love rather than something a lot of people will like. Don't aim for the mediocre masses. Instead, build something that you know a core group of superfans will scream from the rooftops about. You want to build something that people will share willingly and evangelize with enthusiasm rather than building something that people will mildly like but never spread. Smith said that this has been a core part of the rapid growth of Breather. People say, did you know this is a thing, right? When they find about it, when they share it with others, like, I can't believe this is a thing. So how can you refine your idea so that it targets a small group of super fans? And how can you shape it so that those who do embrace it will truly love it and will tell everyone about it? That's what you want to do when you're putting your work into the world. One of the reasons we become paralyzed when we're trying to put something into the world is that we think, well, I don't know if this is going to have mass appeal. I don't know if everyone is going to love this. Well, no, you're right. Everyone will not love it. But you only need a select set of people to love it. One of the things that I've been operating by now for a while is the mantra, make something you love for someone who will love it. And I think if we engage with that kind of mindset as we're creating every day, I think that we can't help but make things that will eventually catch on, because the people who discover it, the people who do truly love it, are going to talk about it. They're going to talk about it all the time. Every time I write a book, I don't think about how can I write a massive best-selling book. I try to think about how can I write a book that the people I'm writing to, the very small set of people, and quite frankly, I write to one person when I write, typically. How can I write a book that that person will love? And I trust that if I do that, eventually the book is going to reach its audience. But if I try to write to everyone, then no one is going to resonate with it. It's kind of like that thing where it's like, it's okay. It's fine, right? But you can't afford fine. There are too many great things out there. You have to write something great, make something great, put something great into the world. And so to do that, you have to focus on the person you are serving, not the masses. All right, so those are three things that I recently went back and looked at and pulled out of that interview with Julian. Again, I'm going to link it up in the show notes, and I'm going to be sending it out to the email list as well. So if you go to accidentalcreative.com/subscribe, you can get that as a link this week in this week's email. But those are the three things. So the three core questions that I think are important to ask are, where in your work do you need to project more confidence, right? Do you need to just own it? You know, Seth Godin and I were both recently speaking in an event, and he was saying, he said something backstage I thought was really profound. He said, you know, what we don't lack humility. What we lack is hubris. We need more people to exhibit hubris, more people who are willing to put their work into the world and say, I made this, and to stand up, right? So where in your work do you need to project more confidence, or where might you be blinded by overconfidence is another thing that you need to ask. Do you know what you are and aren't willing to compromise in order to build your idea? That's the second thing that I encourage you to ask this week. You have to have your core set of principles, your productive passion, and those things can't be compromised, right? And then finally, how will you refine your idea so that it targets a small group of super fans? How can you make something you love for someone who will love it? If you do that, it will find its audience. If you try to reach the mediocre masses, you're going to build a mediocre product. All right. Hey, would love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, your comments about this. Interact at accidentalcreative.com is my email address. You can reach me there, or at accidentalcreative.com. And I also encourage you to go to accidentalcreative.com/subscribe and jump on the mailing list there at accidentalcreative.com, where I send out a regular list of articles as well as all the latest content from AC World. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.